You're listening to the Sound Girls podcast with Susan and our guest host, Willa Snow. Willa, welcome, and please tell us about yourself.
Hey, y'all. Thanks for having me. I'm a live audio engineer based out of Austin, Texas, and I am the chapter head for the Austin Sound Girls.
Nice. So this episode features an interview with recording engineer Alexandria Perryman. Alexandra Perryman is an Emmy Award-winning live broadcast engineer at NASA's Johnson Space Center, where one of her jobs is to run audio for the astronauts on the International Space Station. She is also the producer of NASA's official podcast, Houston, We Have a Podcast. Welcome, Alex.
Hey, welcome.
Hi.
We are so happy to have you here. We have some questions for you, but first I'm going to fangirl a little bit because Will and I were talking before about how cool we think you are.
you ooze cool, dude. Like, the
you
coolest of the cool.
Literally have one of the coolest jobs, if not the coolest jobs I've ever heard of. And so we are so excited to talk to you again.
This is awesome. Yeah, my job is pretty cool. Yeah.
You can't even like be like, nah, it's not. No, it's literally what can be cooler than talking to astronauts all day. So our first question is for you to tell us about your typical day at NASA.
You know, I really wish I had a typical day at NASA. So for us, like, I don't have a set time every day that I know I have to come in. Basically, for me, it's what's my first event or what's my first thing that I have to do, and that's the time that I come in an hour before that. So if I'm doing a live event with the space station that's going out on NASA TV, I come in an hour before that to set up, and sometimes that could be 3 a.m that could be 11 a.m that could be 11 p.m at night, and I just structure my day through that. So there's days where if it's a spacewalk, I'll come in at 3:30 in the morning and I work till about 2:30 in the afternoon. And then I'm home for the rest of that day. But if it's another day where I have multiple shows, I can come in, say around 7 a.m., work that first show. Then I have to do recording a podcast. Then I have to do podcast editing. And then I might have a field shoot that same day across the NASA Center. So it really just depends on what I have going on that day.
Do you have any assistants that help you out, or are you doing it all by yourself?
I usually do it all by myself. If it's like a crew news conference or something like that, I have an A2. And usually the A2 is my supervisor, which is can get quite interesting. But yeah, I sometimes have an A2. Other than that, it's just me.
That's awesome. So I have questions about comms and the way that you guys use those, because that's something that we teach. You know, I'm a teacher at Full Sail. What is your comm situation, and can you give us some explanation of why comms are important? Because a lot of my students, although we teach it, they don't seem to grasp the importance of proper communication. So I'd love to know what they do over there.
Yeah, so for us, for internal comms, if I wanted to talk to, say, someone in Mission Control or someone that's in another building, we have a thing called a device that has voice loops on it. And it's kind of like being able to talk, kind of like walkie-talkies almost, but the audio is much clearer. You pick up like what's a phone, or some people have a headset and they push the talk down on that device. Now, when we're on that, we have to be really clear about who we are talking to and really clear about what we're trying to get our point across, because of the fact that, like me as the audio engineer, I hear and listen to multiple voice loops is what we call them. I maybe listen to 30 at a time. So if someone is calling for me, they need to let me know who they are, what voice loop they're on, and what they want to talk about, because it can get a little hectic and confusing with multiple people talking, and I need to be able to hear them all. For internal, with like my team, like the producers or the editors talking to them, we use a thing called RTS system, which is like an intercom system.
And yeah, that's what we use. On that. That's what we're teaching our students now.
Yeah, so the RTS system is really awesome. You just click on that, and I can say whichever producer I want to talk to or something. And we're a lot less formal on that one, because I can literally see them across the window. We're separated by a glass window, and I can see them.
That's awesome.
So with that script of like, they need to let you know, that they're calling for you, who they are, where they are. So what exactly does that sound like? Would it be like, hey, this is Willa calling for Alexandria and I need to talk about how this cable is failing? Or so what does that sound like?
It's even more formal than that. So
really,
if I want to talk to a commentator, I would say commentator ACR, which is me, on commentator loop. Mm-hmm. And then they'll respond back. And then we can kind of have a less lax thing, but we have to straight up say it that way. Or if I want to talk to flight, I would say flight director ACR on flight loop. You have to say it that way or they will not respond to you.
Got it. What does ACR stand for?
Audio control room. So just like the flight director, they have their own name, Capcom, who talks to the astronauts all the time. They're the ones who are the one sound voice other than ACR that talks to the astronauts. We all have our little names, like you have Capcom, Fido, and all those different names. ACR is ours, which is the audio control room. And then for the producers, it's PCR, mm-hmm. Production control room.
Is it weird or are you just used to it now talking to these like high ranking government people?
Oh, it's still weird.
Yeah.
it's still weird. It still is weird. I really don't like getting on the device and talking to the people in Building 30. I hate that so much. I'm used to talking to the commentator. I have to talk to them all the time. And I'm used to talking to what we call Houston Voice, which is the people who opened up my audio signal for my console to go to the space station. Mm-hmm. And I do voice checks with them. So I'm used to talking to them. But if I ever have to talk to flight, I'm a nervous wreck.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Is everything that you guys do over comms recorded?
So our voice loops, I believe they all are recorded. The ones that go out are really the space, the ground loops, which is the astronauts talking to mission control and mm-hmm. vice versa, going back and forth. Those are all public, except for whenever they're talking to family or medical doctors, they'll switch to a private loop. But other than that, it's all recorded and most of it is public.
Yeah, I read a lot of the biographies and the Astronauts Wives Club. So I was reading a lot of those books last year. And so I thought most of the things that they actually communicate were public. So that's really interesting. That it's got to be weird. I mean, you're just talking about normal stuff, so it doesn't matter if it's public or not. But I always found that kind of interesting that most things you say, other people are listening and can hear.
Yeah, other people like me.
Yeah.
Who's just sitting there listening to them talk about, I think the other day they were talking about urine samples. I was like, this seems like a private conversation. I don't think I need to be included in this. So I just kind of turned it down because I turned down my speakers because I couldn't turn it off. It needs to be recorded, but I don't want to hear about it.
Yeah. You're not interested in the, you know, bodily functions of astronauts? I mean,
right. No, I'm okay with that.
Oh man. So do you use any tools that you consider to be kind of outside the normal scope of audio engineering but are super important to your job?
I mean, not necessarily. I mean, we use hardware like compressors, limiters, all of that. We use field recording devices. We have a traditional broadcast mixing board. So anything that we use there is pretty much what you would find at any news station or what you would find sometimes in a studio. Our production room that we have Pro Tools like everyone else does. We have we even have a MIDI keyboard and we do a lot of audio archiving. So we have tape recorders. Mm-hmm. It's pretty much the same stuff that we use there, which was kind of nice because I didn't have to really learn a lot of new things.
Yeah. That's helpful for sure. So you said in another interview that you really liked the Zoom. The F8, is that the bigger recording style one, not the little handy ones?
Yeah, it's the bigger recording style one. It has like you can have 8 inputs in that thing. You can do dual recording. Mm-hmm. It's perfect for, I use it to do our podcast.
Oh yeah.
Our computers sometimes are a little weird. So I just record our podcast in that. We use it for field shoots. And it's really good because you can connect it to, you know, the camera operator and have mm-hmm. time sync in it. So it helps our editors.
Yeah.
Which is great.
I love Zoom stuff. the devices, not the software, not the, the software that we're using right now.
Yeah, the software leaves much to be desired.
Pretty over that one, but I love the Zoom stuff. I used those when we were in film school, and I had the little H6 handy recorder, and I loved that one. I haven't gotten the newer one, like the F8, because I haven't had to record that many channels outside of our normal system. Like, I haven't had to take it places, but I've always been eyeing it because it looked pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't actually had to use all those channels to record. I made the case to my supervisor that we needed it because it was new, and we haven't bought anything new for audio equipment in a long time, and that we needed new up-to-date audio equipment. And so they're like, sure, we'll buy it. And I was like, okay, well, now I got to find stuff to record with it. So what I do is I record our podcast, and then I do dual recordings on it. So I have a backup just in case something happens with that SD card.
Yeah.
And we've been using it in the field a lot more lately because it is durable and it can go out there. If we're in like the Mars yard or in like a moving Mars rover and we're trying to get capture audio, it's really handy to have.
That's so cool. So jelly of your job. Being a teacher, you think is going to be exciting and you get all this new equipment, but it's not like Mars yard exciting. That's
yeah, it's all fun and games. So your shoes are red.
Yeah. Oh man. So, can you tell us something that you're excited about right now? I've heard about some really cool things that you're working on, between astronauts and students.
Yeah. So we have been doing the year of education on station. We haven't stopped it, but it's slowed down a lot because right now kids are not in school.
Yeah.
So it's hard to gather them all up to be able to do it, especially with everything that's going on with COVID. They're not on campus either. So we do have a couple of other shows that we're doing where the kids are actually submitting their video questions and we're putting it together as a package and running it to the astronauts, and they're answering it real time to the people that are watching on NASA TV. But that's been really fun. You get to see students all across the world, really, because we've had international clients do the same thing, but it's pretty awesome.
So I'm curious, is there much of a delay in between, like, I would assume so, considering that the signal's going all the way out to space and then back. Have you had any challenges with coordinating the delay between the astronauts and the students?
There is a delay. We take account of that. We kind of know what that delay is, especially because whenever they're talking on their handheld mics, it's hitting an encoder because it's also going in with HD video and HD audio. We want that super clean video and super clean audio to come together to us in lip sync. So we put it through, they put it through an encoder and bounces it off of satellite, which then goes to building 30, which is mission control, then goes to our master control, then building 8, and then it comes to HUD. So yeah, it's about a 2.5 second delay. But
that's it.
That's
really
it.
Wow.
Yeah, it's not terrible.
No, wow.
Yeah,
that's
and when
pretty
they're
incredible.
Talking to the when they're talking to the astronauts or talking to say mission control, their delay is even smaller. It's almost like a phone call because they're not having to worry about HD video or HD audio. It kind of sounds like they're talking via walkie-talkies. So the audio quality is a lot less, but it's just like me and you talking right now.
Wow, that's really amazing. So what handheld mics do they have up there with them? If you don't mind, is that something I'm allowed to ask?
Yeah, I can't answer that one.
Okay, cool. Then never mind.
But so I tell you, it's a common mic. It's a common mic.
Gotcha.
Like, I mean, but I definitely have one that you could buy as an audio professional.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. It's not like it was specialty designed for it. It's a common mic. We just can't really get into brands.
I got
sure. Yeah, no, totally understandable. I mean, I just know like some microphone companies used to like manufacture speakers and such for government use. So I'm curious if it's maybe that one, or maybe it's this one that's like international and all over the place. It'd be fun if it was like Sure on the Moon, but I mean, you know, I'm just like, that could be like their new slogan and then they would just take off. But I totally understand if you can't indulge any information.
Yeah.
So a question that we've asked a few of our interviewees is to talk to us about the worst like show or audio experience that you've had, if you care to share.
Yeah.
This could be worse for you or worse for other people, whatever version you want.
So the worst show I've had for me was we were doing a spacewalk and everything was going great. For me, spacewalk days are like a marathon. And as an audio engineer, you literally set up the console an hour before, get, you know, your duckers in place. You have the interpreter in the booth, their mic set up and everything. And once the show starts, you're just monitoring and making sure that the audio level is coming in clean. So you don't have to really, really hard mix anything. But this one particular day, and I believe it's like my second spacewalk that I've ever done, and the first one by myself, half the console just went black. Like it started making popping noises.
Oh my God.
And just went black while we're live on air. And
nope.
The commentator's mic was still perfect. His mic was still perfect and he's talking, but the space-to-ground loops were affected by the IOs because they just so happened to be on that side of the console that was messing up. And so I told the commentator what was going on. He's like, well, how can you fix it? I was like, well, one sure way I know to fix it is to restart the console. And that's not an option because we're currently live on air and we're going to be live on air for the next 6.5 hours.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
What did you do?
Yeah. So I told him, I was like, do we have any video playbacks coming up? And we have about a 6-minute video that we normally show that explains what the spacewalk is going to be about. And that's on the opposite side of the console. So I told him, I said, can we play that video now? And then I can try and patch out everything from that side that I need to the other side of the console. And so that's literally what I did. They rolled the video and I was just sort of patching like crazy. I think it was like 14 different things I had to patch and make sure that they were all like on the other side of the console. I had to basically redo the ducker I had set up because I had to move the interpreter. I had to move the normal space to ground loops which we were using space to ground too, but I need up space to ground 2, down space to ground 2, select space to ground 2, and make sure that my sub mix moves over there. Like it was a lot that I had to move over, but I was able to do it with 45 seconds to spare.
Wow. Geez, is this all analog patching, like hardwire?
Yes.
Oh
yes.
Man. So you don't even have like a Dante network or anything to make it fast.
No,
oh
no, I was literally over there hand patching everything into the other side of the console.
God, my stomach is in my ankles right now for you. Holy crap.
Would you rather have like a Dante system so that you could just like click around and repatch things, or do you like your analog setup?
I think I actually prefer the analog setup a lot better because of the fact that I need to be able to see everything at one time.
Mm-hmm.
For us, we're dealing with a lot and a lot of different channels. So I need to be able to see all of that at the same time, especially when it comes to patching. Now, we do use this thing called eMix that comes through with Abbott with the console, that we could do some of the patching on there that we know that it's going to be set in stone, just leave it there. But for a lot of the stuff, I patch almost every day different things in because of all the audio we have coming in. I can't always leave it set on the console, so I have to patch it in as needed. So having something that's analog and being able to do it that way works for me better.
Mm. For your processing then, are you using outboard gear to process, or is your console digital and then you're processing in the box?
Outboard gear.
Nice.
We're definitely
have any, like,
using a lot of outboard gear.
Do you have any toys there that you're allowed to talk about that you really like?
Be honest with you, I can't really remember some of their names. I know I am upset that they got rid of our ISDN lines. I was not very happy with that.
It
kind of makes it hard to get clean audio from clients if you can't use an ISDN and you're just able to use like a digital hybrid. I'm mm-hmm. like, that's not the same. It still sounds like a phone. But, you know, those things are super expensive. So I can understand like you have to have 2 phone lines set at for that aside, and it's really expensive to keep, and not a lot of people still use it, except for us. We're the people who still use it.
Can you get more into the ISDN and how it works and like, and all of that?
So ISDN is basically like, for the way we use it is, say we're talking to, what's a good one, NPR, and they want to do an interview with an astronaut on the space station. I would be able to dial up NPR's phone number and their settings inside this ISDN. And it's kind of like console to console talking to each other. So mm-hmm. I have the astronaut's audio coming into my console through an encoder, and it's clean HD audio. basically right out of the microphone audio, and it sounds super clear. And then likewise, NPR will have their microphones and everything directed into their console, and that console is hooked up to the ISDN through phone numbers. But once we dial and get into that, it's kind of like I'm hearing them talk inside their studio coming through the mic, which is super clear, and it's really awesome to have. You get the best audio results that way.
Mm-hmm. Man, that is a bummer that they got rid of it then. Darn.
Yeah, I was sad.
Mm-hmm.
What do you have to do now to compensate for that?
We use telephone hybrids. And we let them know that the audio quality is going to be less. A lot of times, if it's like a news outlet that wants to use our recording, since they are only going to be able to get it through it like a telephone thing, what we'll do, we'll record on our end and just send them a file of it later so they can have the clean audio that we recorded.
Gotcha. So I'm curious, if you ever had to leave NASA, if like the world ended and NASA was like, okay, we no longer need audio services, where would you go? Or like, shoot, heaven forbid you got bored, because it doesn't sound like you could ever be bored. But what if you got bored and you wanted to try something new? Would you move into like maybe sports or news, since like you're doing live broadcast? Or would you just...
I thought about this. I mean, I wouldn't mind. I don't know if I necessarily want to go. Sports would be one. Live broadcast sports would be one, because I'm really interested in the sport. I probably would not go into news. I'm not that hype on the news stuff that's going on.
Fair.
And I don't know if I could sit there and have to listen to that. But then I also thought about one of my things that I was really interested in when I was in high school was forensics. So I wouldn't mind getting into forensics audio. And it doesn't have to be live, just being able to clean up that audio and working through for the government through that way. That would be pretty awesome.
That'd be a super cool job.
Yeah, I've heard of some of our grads doing that before, where they got into the forensic side of things, which is really, the tools that they use are really cool.
Oh, yeah.
You got to learn your isotope really well.
Exactly. I was like, isotope is like one of my favorite things. See, I use it for our podcast. So it's one of my favorite things to have. And so I was like, this actually wouldn't be so bad.
Actually, Willa, that we were talking about like what editing platforms we use. And I told you I use Audition a lot. And before I was able to really get into iZotope, I would use some of its plugins and spectral editing that was integrated within Audition, which is how I got into that, and I thought that was really fun. I used to edit audio for TV,
awesome.
Which just means cleaning it up and fixing it because they didn't record it properly in the first place.
Yep.
Oh, man. So one of our favorite questions that we ask when Becky is here is, what is your favorite go-to beverage? And I almost can guess the answer because of your crazy hours.
It's definitely Red Bull. Like it's Red Bull. I had to cut down off of coffee because I realized that I would drink a coffee, and then because it tastes leaves a weird taste in my mouth, I end up drinking a Coke, and I was like, well, that's too much caffeine. So I just stick with like Red Bull, or I drink a Coke on the hours where it's like that 2 a.m. to like 4 a.m. type of time period. It's Red Bull. If it's a little bit later than that or a little bit earlier than that, I can deal with a Coke and I'll be fine.
Do you have your wings coming in yet?
Right? Yeah.
I had to.
No, it was good. I think I did that day the console crashed on me because it happened at like 4:30 in the morning.
Oh, man.
I'm pretty sure my wings flew out.
Yeah, I can't imagine thinking clearly that early in the morning. Like.
What are your tricks for maintaining your health during all of these crazy hours? Do you have anything that you're relying on besides the Red Bull? Like, are you able to draw on like some weird adaptive 4-minute nap sleep schedule type thing? Or how do you survive?
So I'm a big fan of like puzzles. So in order to wake my brain up, like when I first get in there and I'm like setting up my console, and I've already kind of set it up, and I try to get there, you know, if it's an hour before the show, I'll probably get there an hour and 30 minutes before. And so that way I'll give myself time to like wake my brain up. So I'll do like word searches, or I do like crossword puzzles to wake my brain up and get ready for problem solving type of thinking. When it comes to naps, I try not to nap when needed, but if I have shows that have like weird hours, like I may have like a docking show at 1 o'clock in the morning, and then two or three hours later, I have another show that's on the, where they're actually open up the hatch and getting there, going inside, but there's like a 3 hour time period in between, then I'll probably go nap in my car. I have a pillow and a blanket. I'll nap in my car because there's no point of me going home and trying to come back. So I'll just nap in my car for like an hour and a half. And then that way, when I wake up, I'm able to get back into focus again, especially if I have to drive home afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I think maybe NASA should invest in like a sleeping hammock for you inside.
They do have them. They have cots and we have them there. They're just not as comfortable as my heated seats in my car.
That's fair.
That's way better. Plus you have the privacy and like the isolation of just you and your space, and you don't have to worry about somebody walking into your car to come and
No, it's just me and the deer that hang out around the office doors.
It's a lot more tranquil. Do you find, aside from the napping, how else do you spend your downtime?
Yeah, so when I'm up there and spend my downtime and I don't have a lot of things to do, I like walking around the site. Like Johnson Space Center is huge, right? Because it originally was going to be Rice University, but Rice decided to move over to another place. So Johnson Space Center took up that complex size. So it's almost like its own little city. Like we have a hospital, we have a school for the employees' kids to go there. There's literally a bus. And we have a fire department, and you can walk around. We bike everywhere there because it's green. So we bike all around the site. We have lakes with ducks that are really aggressive, by the way. Those ducks are something else. But we have lakes, and there's benches everywhere. There's all types of wildlife. There's a friendly armadillo that likes to hang out by one of the lakes. So it's really peaceful just to get outside and just walk around and see how pretty just NASA really is.
Especially when you're locked in a dark room for hours on end, it's nice to go and get that sunshine and the fresh air. And, you know, because we're all plants with more complicated emotions. So we need that vitamin D and the oxygen. So one thing I definitely want to take advantage of while you're here is I have to talk to you about your TikToks. Your TikToks are the best. They are absolutely genius. So what got you into those?
Quarantine. I call it my quarantine fame. Like, I mean, I'm home. I'm working throughout the day, you know, as I can from home. We can't necessarily go back on site at Johnson Space Center unless we have an event that requires us to be there. So like today, I'm working from home. And in between me working from home, I have to wait for people to respond to my emails. And when I'm having to do that, I have nothing to do. I've gotten up to date on archiving, so I've archived everything I possibly could. And so I just start making TikToks because I'm bored. And I feel like I missed out on the Vine generation. I should have been in it because I was a college student when Vine was really popular, but I never paid attention. So this is my time to get my quarantine fame.
I love it. So what is your TikTok handle so that our listeners can follow up on this? Because y'all, you need to check out Alexandria's TikToks.
Yeah, so it's Dope Chick Beats, all one word. I have about 12,000 followers now, which kind of freaked me out because I just started making TikToks in April. Like, I literally just started making them in April. I was like, you people find me funny? What is this?
You're hilarious, man. Like, oh my goodness. And you can pose music too.
No, go ahead. I don't have TikTok, so I'm going to have to check these out because I am now very intrigued.
You have to. Oh, my goodness. And so you compose music, too. Like, you do some electronic music?
Yeah, so I'm really – I don't have a set genre that I do. I'm kind of – for me, it's whatever mood I'm in, that's what you're going to get. So some days I really like EDM music. Some days I'm feeling like chill hop or R&B. Mm-hmm. Or I've even done like country music. It's just however I'm feeling at that moment, that's what I made.
Right on. And are you using instruments for this or do you have like patches that you're using? What platform are you recording into?
Yeah, so I use Logic. I love Logic X, and I have a Kai MPK over here. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just using, there's another app that I started using, and I can't remember what it's called off the top of my head. But basically what it is that it has its own VSTs in it. And mm-hmm. so you pay for it subscription based. I really wish I knew the name of it, but it's by, I want to say Outlook. I think it's called Arcade or something like that. I pay for that monthly, and it comes with thousands and thousands of sounds that update all the time. And so I'm able just to sit there and use my MPK and just make stuff as I feel. And it's pretty awesome.
That's neat. When did you start getting into that?
I want to say, like, I'm still a student at Full Sail. When I started making it, my roommate, her boyfriend, used to make music, and I would just be so interested in what he was doing. I was like, that sounds really cool. I mean, I played instruments when I was in high school. I was in band. I played saxophone. I played piano. I was like, this is kind of cool. I think I could do this. And so I started just, like, mimicking how he was doing things and kind of peeking over his shoulder and figuring it out on my own.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Have you done any cool collabs with other artists that you really like?
Yeah, I've done actually, well, not really collabs, but I do create promo music for YouTubers. So that's kind of really my platform, because I have this hard time of starting a song and not being able to finish it.
Sure.
So I have like thousands of untouched songs that are not finished completely. And so what I started doing is trying to clear my library of that by letting YouTubers license that out for their YouTube channel. And so basically what they do is they'll just say, hey, I like this one right here. I'm like, cool, it's 1:30, so perfect. And they're like, that's great timing.
That is all we need right there.
Yeah.
That's really neat. So what was that SpaceX launch like? So you guys had that at the Houston NASA, right?
Yeah, so what it was is that entire show was really interesting, because you're working with Johnson Space Center in Houston, Kennedy Space Center in Florida, and then Hawthorne, which is SpaceX's mission control. We're all three of us working together for one show, and we were on air, I think, for like a total of like 25 hours,
wow.
Just nonstop. And we would all switch off taking turns of who was coordinating that show. But it was so weird the way that we had the audio coming in. So I would, Johnson Space Center, whenever it was SpaceX and KSC in control of the show, they would literally, we would be considered like a live hit, as if you're watching the news and they have like a live hit for someone that's like at a car wreck site or something like that. We were considered as a live hit. So we were sending them our audio as a live hit. And then KSC was sending SpaceX their audio. SpaceX would turn around, send us back all of the audio for us at Johnson Space Center to put on NASA TV. So I had three mixes going on at the same time.
Oh, man.
I was sending them my audio. They were sending it right back for me with SpaceX and KSC's audio to go out on NASA TV. And it was like this weird orchestrated dance that was going on for 25 hours straight.
Mm-hmm. 25 hours is insane.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I didn't work the entire thing. I didn't work the entire thing. We had shifts that day because it would be impossible.
Yeah. Thank goodness for that. Oh,
yeah.
Now I have to ask, have you been inside of a spaceship yet?
Yep. I've been inside the mock-up versions, especially the Orion spaceship that's going to come up. We had to do some shoots inside of there. Recently we had two cast members from the Star Wars latest movie, Naomi Aki and Kelly Marie Tran. So we had them come and train like an astronaut for a day. And part of that, they were inside of the Orion mock-up. Capsule, and I had to climb in with them in order to capture their audio. It was really cool.
Have you done the astronaut training?
Not all of it, but I have done some of it. I've done the Mars yard. I got to drive a Mars rover, which was really fun. That thing is crazy. Being able to basically, it's an all-wheel drive type of vehicle. So, like, literally, if I want to go right, I just press the button to go right, and the vehicle just goes right while my body's still facing this way. It's the craziest thing.
Wow.
Yeah, and I've tried astronaut food. It's actually not terrible. Huh. It's pretty good. They have really good variety, so.
Versus, like, what, college food? Is it better than that?
Oh, it's way better than college food. Like for Thanksgiving, they, you know, I mean, they had turkey. Now it was packaged food, but it still was cooked turkey and dressing. And, mm-hmm. and like whenever they have international partners, they get to try food from their country, which is mm-hmm. really cool. So they had like French cuisine there, Italian food. They make a lot of tacos in space. So I love tacos, which is perfect.
Yes.
They can't use normal bread, so they use tortillas for everything if they want to have bread. So if they're making a PB&J, it's kind of like a PB taco, which is awesome.
I mean,
right on. Yeah, definitely could be worse.
Oh, yeah.
So how did you get this job then? Like, did you just, like, find it on a job listing site or what?
Yeah, pretty much. But it's interesting because, like, I don't remember filling out the application for this job. It was like whenever you're like job hunting and you fill out like thousands of applications at like 3 o'clock in the morning, that's how was. And so when they called me for an interview, it was months after I had filled out this application. I forgot who they were. And they didn't say that they were NASA. They just said the name of the contract company because I'm a federal contractor. So I looked at the contract company. I'm like, these people are talking about like engineering for rockets. I'm so confused. I didn't really see the multimedia side of that website. So I was super confused if they knew that I'm not that type of engineer, that I have no idea how to build a rocket. But yeah, it was, I looked it up. It was like on indeed.com, but it didn't say NASA. So when I went back and found the job site and nowhere on there did it say NASA. I didn't find out until I actually got the interview and I went there and they're like, yeah, this is for our site at NASA. I was like, okay, and what do you want me to do here? And that's when they explained it to me. I was like, oh, okay. So I'm still doing audio. So I just want to make sure like this is the same thing that I know how to do.
I'm not going to space or anything. I'm just doing the audio part.
Like, you guys aren't going to expect me to build anything, right?
Like, not a rocket scientist, audio scientist.
Audio scientist, yes. Rocket scientist, no.
Were you always so interested in space before this? Like, was it kind of like when you found out it was NASA, it's like, oh man, now I can live out my dream of being an astronaut, sort of? Or like, how did that connect?
I'm from the Houston area. So growing up, living in Space City, NASA is huge here for us. And I was one of those kids who wanted to not only be an astronaut, but I wanted to be an engineer, a NASA engineer, which is awesome. Because back then, when I was smaller, I was always taking things apart, redoing my dad's radio. And not being very successful at putting it back together, but I love the whole idea of being able to put it together.
Yeah.
I was a huge fan of science. And so just being able to work at NASA as an engineer is like, this is exactly what I wanted. And I get to still do my love of audio at the same time.
Yeah, I feel growing up in Florida, that's one of the coolest things that we've got here because, you know, it's Florida. So the space part has always been the coolest thing. So I feel that. I always was sad that I wasn't smart enough to be like a regular, like real engineer, you know?
Hey now. You're definitely smart enough. You just have passions that popped up in other areas. Come on now.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being on the Sound Girls podcast, Alexandria. You are the coolest lady. For sure.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. Reach out to us at soundgirlspod@gmail.com if you would like to be a guest, have an idea for a guest, or a topic that you'd like to hear us cover.
Hey, we have something exciting to tell you all about. The Sound Girls annual scholarships are now open and will close July 31st for applications. So get your applications in. You only have till the end of July. There is two $500 scholarships in honor of Ethel Gabriel. Sound Girls will be awarding these two $500 scholarships to members pursuing a career in the recording arts. These scholarships will be awarded in August and can be used for educational training and university programs. The scholarships are open to all members of Sound Girls, including international students. There are also four $250 scholarships open to any member of Sound Girls that is attending or plans to attend an educational program in professional audio. There's no age requirement and includes college programs, trade schools, seminars, and workshops. These applications are open to all gender and non-conforming genders. They will be awarded in August and are open for applications right now until the end of July 31st. So get those apps in. Go to soundgirls.org to find out more about these scholarships. Soundgirls.org. Thank you all for listening to the Sound Girls podcast, Resonating Beyond Sound. We'll catch you next week when we talk to another amazing sound human. Have a great week, all.